Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Monsters Among Us. I am your guide, Derek Hayes. And welcome to a bonus episode of Monsters Among Us. And tonight's episode is another roundtable. Now, I know that there are a handful of you out there that don't particularly enjoy the roundtables, so I'll ask that you skip this one. I'll be back on Thursday with my regularly scheduled program. But for those of you that do enjoy the roundtables, you're in for a treat. Me and David Flora from Blurry Photos Podcast and Justin Zenger from Zeng This Podcast sit down and talk about a documentary that's near and dear to my childhood heart. Enjoy the show. Tonight on the Round Table, proof there are giant creatures living at the edge of our civilization. And no, that's not a Monsters Among Us promo. This weekend, we watched the 1975 documentary, The Mysterious Monsters. Gentlemen, introduce yourselves.
Hey, I'm David Flora from the Blurry Photos Podcast. What's up?
Hey. I'm Justin Zenger from the Zing This Podcast.
And of course, I'm Derek Hayes from Monsters Among Us Podcast. We are back today.
Say what's up, Derek.
What's up? What's up?
Perfect.
What's up? Okay, sorry. We really apologize for that. Tonight, we did watch the 1970s documentary, I'll say that with a grain of salt, The Mysterious Monsters, hosted by the Josh Gates of his time, Peter Graves. Guys, what did you think of this film?
So putting this out there real quick, I couldn't place who he was for a few minutes, and then it finally dawned on me. I was like, oh, Airplane. That came to mind for me. I don't know about you guys.
Airplane 2, the sequel. Yes. Either of the airplanes. I looked him up on IMDb, and he was in a ton of stuff. Golden Girls, like he had, you know, guest appearances on all kinds of stuff.
Murder, She Wrote, I think he was in.
Yeah, I saw that as well.
One of those.
Oh, man.
And Mission Impossible, right?
I believe so, yeah. Yeah. I mean, he was like the everyman's kind of actor, and I think he had a bit of like a comedian streak in him, too, because he did do the Airplane movies, so.
He was the straight like Robert man Stack. In most of those.
Yeah, he's a great straight man.
Yeah.
Well, just like Robert Stack, who played the straight man in a lot of things as well, but yeah. Also a creepy show. So what did you guys think of this? Let's start with you, David.
You know what? I actually kind of liked this because I thought it offered a lot, and we'll get into that in a little bit, but I thought it was pretty good in what it offered and how it approached stuff. Now, it kind of, to me, set itself up to be more of a variety of stuff than maybe it actually was, which it kind of landed on just like Bigfoot. Here's a little Nessie stuff, but mostly Bigfoot.
Yeah.
You know, but I thought it was pretty good for a 1975 documentary.
I really liked it as well. I thought that the the side questing to Loch Ness and to the Himalayas momentarily for like a little like, let's talk about this stuff to make this stuff make sense sort of thing was very cool. I have to admit the costume job in this was better than the Hitler Bigfoot movie we did the last time. So, I mean, just throwing that out there. Also, I missed when they did documentaries like this and they just walk into random labs, people's office. Like, I love the zoom out to show him like in an office, like with like paperwork and stuff, or zoom out to show him like in a lab with people randomly working, or zoom out to show him sitting in somebody's house, which is just something that, and this is going real pop culture here. I'm sure Dave will remember, Troy McClure from, The Simpsons, hi, I'm Troy McClure. Like, it just, I finally figured out where exactly they got that joke from of like the introduction and the person randomly standing in something somewhere. So,
and that's
with
pretty
like
dead
a
on.
Jacket slung over their shoulder.
Yeah.
Well, he does get out of the sports car at a certain point, like a bright red convertible sports car to go to the psychic's house.
Yes.
So it's all there.
Which Simpsons I have did. A note on that psychic for later.
And then he's like just kind of sitting by like an archaeological dig or something like right that one part.
Yeah.
It zooms out and he's just like, and here people are doing research on this on the field.
See, I miss that. I miss that in documentaries. I want more of it. Just in random people's houses.
Well, you can tell the production value on this is pretty high. They go all over the world. They shoot in they're in Loch Ness. They go to Nepal, I believe. I fell asleep for a little bit. I enjoyed it. I should probably say why I picked this film. When I was about, I want to say probably eight, I'd say this is probably 1988, 89, something like that. My uncle actually had this on VHS. And I probably watched that documentary or that film until it wore out. Every day we would watch that thing. And we did dubs of it and stuff, so I took it home, and we were just fascinated by it because to us it was real. They talk like it's real, like these creatures are actually out there. So in my mind, like, we go outside afterwards, I'm like, do I have to look around? Like, what's out here? Because they kind of sell it that way, you know?
And I like that about this, but I'm sure there's other stuff I like that we'll get into later, I'm sure.
They sell it like that while also kind of like paying lip service to the scientific aspect of it and like trying to remain a little skeptical and debunk some things and talk to actual scientists about stuff. But in the end, they're like, these creatures live among us.
It's pretty much, yeah, the bottom line of it.
Yeah, basically at the end, there is no definitive proof that these creatures live here. Cut back to narrator. They totally live here.
These creatures totally live here. And the definitive proof is that so many people have stories about them.
Well, at the very end, I don't want to give a spoiler away or anything, but at the very end, he even says something to the effect of, Bigfoot could be as real as a gorilla or the Loch Ness Monster. So that's the benchmark here. It's the Loch Ness Monster. That's how you know it's real.
Because we did a short 5-minute segment on it.
Yeah, and there are photographs of what look like a fin. So therefore, confirm, stamp, let's keep going. Now on to Bigfoot.
Well, they even blamed the boat crash.
Sorry, Justin. Go ahead, Derek.
They even blamed a boat crash on the creature. Saying,
oh my God, did we watch somebody die?
We watched somebody die in this documentary,
good
yes.
Good grief, yeah. Right?
Yikes. So I knew about that boat crash on Loch Ness, like for some random trivia fact. I knew about
it. Set it up for those who hasn't seen it.
So basically, they go to Loch Ness, where of course there's bagpipe music playing. I've never been to Scotland. Is that just in the air there? Is that just like something you hear in the mountains?
They pipe it in like Disney, I think.
Okay, I'm just making sure because it was suddenly playing
along
in the
with
background.
The smell of haggis.
They do this whole thing where they go over the Loch Ness Monster. They show, like, the flipper photo, the surgeon's photo, which the write-up I have for it does point out, by the way, that surgeon's photo was proven to be fake later after this was made. So it wanted to make sure that at least the write-up kept it accurate. And then as they're kind of closing up, they show, oh, well, here's this wake moving in the water that British Air Force analysts have said. Like, they kept bringing up random people who looked at it. Like, police analysts say that it was this, or British Air Force said it was this. And then they finally go to, there was a guy who was doing a speedboat run on here that hit a wake that might have just been the monster itself. And I'm like, wait, what?
And then they show footage of the guy that was trying to break the record for the speedboat, the speed, and it just completely gets destroyed in the water. And then he's like, and he later died. And he died from that.
Yeah.
And it's like,
as you're watching.
Okay.
It.
Yeah. Just show it then, I guess.
Yeah.
It is like 3 grains wide, but it's still there.
Yeah. Yeah, because, I mean, it's one of those things, like, I remember hearing about that there was a speedboat crash, and yes, those things are basically made out of, like, hopes and dreams, because they, like, nick something, they basically just fall apart. But I've never heard it connected to the monster. I've just heard that he just lost control and flipped, and I guess that's the government cover-up on it.
Well, this story's been in my head ever since I was, you know, like I said, 8 or 9 years old, so I've never known anything other than... It's thought that the creature actually caused that accident. So it's interesting to see it from your angle. We should probably do like a quick little rundown of what this documentary is about probably before we get too far into this.
Everything Bigfoot.
We get, yeah,
during the 1970s.
We get so excited to talk about what's in it. We don't even tell anybody what it's about.
Nobody even knows what we're watching. So this film is called The Mysterious Monsters, and it was released on November 15th, 1975, which ironically is 9 years to the day from the first Point Pleasant Mothman sighting from Linda Scarberry, Roger Scarberry, and all those guys.
Get out of here.
I know, synchronicities.
Oh, God, no.
Now, this thing's 45 years old.
Yeah.
My God.
Ancient. Now, before you guys go getting all hellier on me, I found like 3 different release dates. So there was July 76, there was March of 76. It's all over the place. So I don't know when it actually came out.
I've noticed that too.
But this was a big drive-in theater film, I believe, early on with parts of like double features and stuff like that. It was a little before my time when it was released. I wasn't born until several years after this actually came out. But so the film is... full of reenactments, some terrible, some okay. They talk to a lot of experts, but it's mostly Peter Graves going through evidence of Sasquatch and kind of the broad people's houses, the broad strokes of cryptozoology. They talk about discovery of the gorilla or the panda and stuff like that, and they pretty much go back to Bigfoot and really ride his coattails all through the second half of the film. It's like an 86-minute movie, I believe. Anybody have anything else to add to that awesome synopsis or synapsis?
That's pretty much it. I mean, they cover Nessie at one point for a little while, but it's, I don't even know if I'd call it a quarter of the film devoted to Nessie, but it's a good little chunk.
It's 5-10 minutes, I feel. It's just enough to be like, here's another cryptid that we've basically proven exists.
Yeah,
it's kind of how they feel they set it up, especially since I didn't catch that at the end, but if that is in there, that's hilarious.
Oh, I just watched it maybe a half hour ago. It's definitely in there.
All right, good. I must have been one of those things where I'm like, oh, the credits are coming, thank God.
It's got an interesting blend, and one of the reasons that I liked it when I was watching it is the variety of what they show and how they present the stuff, because like you said, they've got the dramatic reenactments, which are comedy gold. They've got Peter Graves talking, just narrating at the camera. He goes and talks to some experts in some parts. There are experts just talking, you know, in other parts. Then they also have, like, they show a dude's polygraph test. They show a girl's hypnosis, and reliving, like, an experience. So there's... And then they have like footage of different things out and about, footage of people hiking through the mountains when they're talking about the Yeti. I love how he says Yeti. and stuff like that. So there's a ton of variety in how they present it, and I thought that was pretty cool.
You know, it just dawned on me. I think we watched the very first episode of Unsolved Mysteries, because it's essentially the exact same format. They just made it creepier for the series.
Yeah.
Granted, Unsolved Mysteries didn't go into the lab and really see, you know, how sound was analyzed and that kind of thing. But
oh my gosh,
it's pretty much the same formula essentially.
I want to talk about that scene, even though it's like halfway through the movie, where it's like it was a group of, correct me if I'm wrong, but it was a group of guys camping, and then they're like, and as they heard this sound, instead of grabbing his gun, he grabbed a microphone, which I'm like, yeah. I'm like, oh man, podcaster. That's a podcaster right there.
And that's then actually a famous recording, believe it or not.
I'm more used to hearing like the whooping recordings, like the howling and stuff like that. So hearing this, I'm like, oh my gosh, was this the first episode of Blurry Photos and that's just Stecco on the mic?
Yeah. I had the mic pointed the wrong way. But it was funny that they bring that up. They do. He literally says, and he grabbed his microphone, or he grabbed his recorder instead of his gun. And then, like, everybody else that they do a dramatic reenactment of, he grabs his gun. The dude at the end grabs his gun. The dude in the house grabs a gun.
Well, the one guy was driving down the road, and he saw, like, a hairy man. Like, this thing was 100 yards away. And he's like, stops the car. He's like, I'm getting my rifle.
Did
and he's,
you see
like,
that?
Sights the thing up. Like, what are you doing, dude? It's just, it looked like a guy just standing there.
And then the woman, like, gets out, his wife, I think it was, and she's like,
shoot it.
Shoot it. Like, what are you doing? Just shoot it. He's like, I can't. She's like, just shoot it. He's like, it looks too human.
Bloodthirsty. This woman was bloodthirsty.
She was.
Kill
she's
it.
She's like, it gets me so turned on.
I want its blood.
I love it when you stop the truck in the middle of the road, get out and shoot somebody.
Okay, I think I'm done.
That's it. Good night, everybody.
The reenactments were, oh man, it's like a how not to act school, essentially.
It was. The other thing that caught me was I was watching this, I was like, I wasn't really doing other stuff. I was kind of like on my phone at one point. They're like, and the witness John Green, and I'm like, wait, you mean like the Bigfoot researcher John Green had an incident?
Different nope. John Green.
I'm like, so apparently if you ever want to have a Bigfoot experience, be involved in Bigfoot, just be named John Green. So I love how they did the reenactment and then showed the guy for the polygraph test who looked like he was frightened beyond reason to be there. Then they tell the polygrapher, they're like, oh, we're not going to tell him. There's this two-way mirror right here. We'll be filming him not to affect the test. And isn't the guy sitting right there?
Yeah. He was also like, we'll be behind this two-way mirror. Clonk, clonk. And like, hits the mirror. Like,
so we don't affect the test.
Yeah, so we don't.
At the end of that scene, they actually showed this kid that gave the polygraph, like, staring at his hand and moving his fingers like Luke Skywalker for a good 30 seconds. I don't know what they were doing with that. But I was fixated on it. I'm like, why are they showing this kid playing with it? He's literally staring at his hand, like moving his fingers, like he's never seen it happen before.
Well, back in the 70s, people used to have to check to make sure their hands worked every now and then.
Or there were psychedelics everywhere in the 70s.
Yeah, he
most
was
likely.
Given complimentary LSD before the polygraph test, obviously.
MK Ultra started this way, essentially.
Yeah. They just had little cubes on the desk.
Take one.
Exactly.
Popped it. So, didn't know what it was.
At a certain point, they put a map of the U.S. up on the screen, and each state has a number, and it represents how many Bigfoot sightings have been reported to this date. And I, you know, like I said, it was 75, 76. Flora, you're in Illinois. So you have 14 sightings. I have the map up right in front of me. Justin, you don't have any.
Yes.
Zero. There's nothing there.
And awesome.
I have 42, but most of them, I assume, are in Northern California. Although, the woman that was hypnotized, I think she witnessed some sort of, like well, obviously it was a Bigfoot creature, but it was near a drag strip. I'm pretty sure that's like 20 miles from me as the crow flies. It's right down the mountain, basically, like San Bernardino, Redlands area.
Really?
I'm pretty sure that's where that took place. And I was actually over there this morning, and I didn't even think about it.
I was wondering if it was the...
Do we need to put him under hypnosis now? See if he actually saw
something. It wasn't even hypnosis. It was just the phone call she had with her sister-in-law or whatever. You picking up the kids? Yeah, I'll pick up the kids. Like, it was the weirdest thing. I've never seen hypnosis like that.
She like mimed doing the rotary dial telephone.
Yeah, she did.
And then like, you know, and then like picked up the receiver, or had the receiver, and had this conversation of like, hey, is so and so over there? Oh, well, yeah, you want us to come over? All right, we'll get the kids. And then all of a sudden, like, there was an attack?
Yeah, well, she's like, there ain't no monster here. And then 2 seconds later, she starts screaming that there's a monster attacking her. So it's...
Yeah, and like breathing heavy. And I'm like, did she crash, or did the thing like jump on the car and like, cause she grabbed her shoulder? It went from like 0 to 60 real quick.
Yeah, that was real weird. There's some really weird stuff in this documentary.
There is, and there's other accounts they don't really get into too much that I've heard a lot more about, like the Offerman tale of him like getting abducted by Bigfoots and stuff. They kind of like vaguely touch on it, and there's like a whole story behind that like
you
they're
mean,
like.
Albert Otzman? Is that who you're talking about?
Yeah, they barely touch on it in this, and I'm like, I was like, oh, cool, I'm going to hear this story, and it's like, and he was abducted by Bigfoots. Moving on to the next tale, it's like, wait, you can't just say that and then move on.
Well, the problem may have been, you know, I don't know if Albert Otzman had an estate or anything like that, but he may not have been able to mention his story because of copyright claims, perhaps. Mm. I don't know. Just throwing that out there.
Like I said, I heard that one. I was like getting ready for it, which, by the way, since it wasn't told in this movie, and I'm not going to go into full detail of it, basically he gets abducted for like, what is it, 3 or 4 days by a family of Bigfoot?
And yeah, like, I can tell the story real quick if you want me to.
Sure. I mean, I'm just trying to get the bullet points of it, but I'm like, I'm pretty sure that's the one. And then there's the one, I don't remember what it is, but it's the one where the guys get, like, attacked, like, their cabin gets attacked by a Bigfoot, and they kind of talk about that. It's, like, it's all these, like, cornerstones of Bigfoot, like, lore and stuff are mentioned in here. But the thing I really enjoy that's kind of different from nowadays documentaries to back then is they focus on Bigfoot the whole time for the most part, minus, of course, like I said, that stuff, because if this was made nowadays, that cutaway wouldn't be to Loch Ness. It would be to talk about how Bigfoot's an interdimensional being, or how ancient aliens, or how they get, what's his name, with the hair on there, and they have to not confuse him for a Bigfoot. Why am I forgetting his name right now?
Peter Graves?
No, the guy with the hair. Sukalos. Thank you.
Peter. I thought you meant the helmet hair that Peter Graves had.
He really did.
I was waiting
like
for
a Lego
him to take.
Yeah, it did. It's exactly what it
was. I was
like.
Waiting for him to take the hair off at one point. but that's the problem with like the documentaries nowadays, is everything is like a unified theory of like crypto and the mysterious stuff. It's all interconnected. And it's like, cool if it is, but why can't we just talk about Bigfoot, or why can't we just talk about this without having aliens and 15 other things, or it's a tulpa brought up? Because I just like a documentary that's just focused on Bigfoot.
Well, there's starting back with man, I don't even know where to start with all that. Let's start with like.
Sorry,
Ape Canyon.
I just dumped out a whole.
That was an unloading. Let's start with Ape Canyon and the mention of Albert Otzman. Yes. Both of those events took place in, I believe, 1925. I don't have it in front of me. Otzman was a gold miner that was actually kidnapped while he was sleeping by a Bigfoot, brought back to the family where he was held captive for, I want to say, 5 days. Finally gave the Bigfoot snuff, and he started choking and essentially passed out. And the guy, Otzman, took off and went back to civilization. And the Ape Canyon one was gold miners as well. Both of these take place in British Columbia, by the way. And or Pacific Northwest region, anyhow.
Washington is the
Washington.
Canyon one.
Okay, that's why I said
in
Pacific Northwest, because I wasn't certain.
1924.
Ah, man.
So you were close. You were.
I lose.
So close.
Anyway,
just across the border on each of them.
They shot exactly. They shot a Bigfoot earlier in the day, and I guess it pissed off the rest of the tribe because they threw rocks and stuff on the cabin and tried to get them out of there so they could do whatever Bigfoots do to people. So those are the two stories. And Justin, your other point was that why didn't they go into more details? Well, the fact is there probably wasn't more details at the time. People have done extensive research on both Ape Canyon and Albert Ostman to get the information we have today. So that's probably why they didn't include it. There just wasn't anything to include.
Wasting all that money taking Peter Graves across the world. And they could have just done research and had him been a talking head instead.
Oh, if you notice, he didn't go to Loch Ness, I don't think.
He's not allowed back there.
Not after the incident. Monster have beef. That's why he has a helmet, Harry. He switches it out, and then he can. They don't recognize him. I don't think they sent him to Loch Ness. I don't remember seeing him in any of the scenes.
Well, I gotta say, while I'm thinking about it, in the very beginning of the film, they're mentioning stuff that what people have said were extinct or didn't exist, or and then they give examples of how people have been mistaken or that's wrong. Like they bring up the coelacanth, which is fair. It's a great point. And they bring up this tribe of people in like the Philippines or something that they're living on the edge of, you know, the civilized world or whatever they call it. And they're like, people didn't know they existed until 1970, whatever. And
two.
But the thing that got me about all this was the music they started playing when they started talking about these people. It was like, I'm like, what are you doing?
It was. I actually have the clip right here in front of me. It was. Please. But it also, I think it was that guy playing that instrument. Maybe I can play this here real quick.
I thought it was drinking something.
You guys can hear it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he's definitely playing that instrument. It's some sort of like mouth harps type instrument that he's playing. But I'm glad you brought up the music because.
Me too. I thought he was being a little over the top with it. Spot on.
Yeah, it's pretty much what it sounds like. Anyhow, I thought the music was pretty decent for, you know, a 45-year-old movie. Especially a documentary, it had the freaky sounds to it, like the old. Uh-huh. It's like a toolkit that these composers have for horror soundtracks. It's like a wrench that you hit on this box that makes this sound, and it's these weird instruments that they play, and you can hear them all throughout with synthesizers and all kinds of stuff. So it's definitely dated, but I think it fits the vibe pretty well.
It does. I mean, it sounds like straight out of the 70s soundtrack too. So
yeah,
I said it's just such a different time in filmmaking. I mean, in documentary, like crypto documentary stuff. So that's something I really enjoyed about it. But I didn't know if you had anything else to pick apart from the unloading I did earlier.
I've already forgotten most of it, so we'll just move on.
I think the last thing was me complaining about Tsoukalos's hair and how everything's like UFO, like everything's interconnected conspiracy stuff now in documentaries. Like it has to talk about, if you're talking about Bigfoot, you have to talk about how it's actually UFOs or Tulpa now.
Well, the way you have to look at that is at a certain point, you've seen everything. If you've seen the entire series of Finding Bigfoot and any of Josh Gates' stuff, like all the same information is being regurgitated over and over. So they're out there looking for new blood. They're looking for people with crazy ideas, and they want to put them up on TV and say, hey, well, this guy is talking about Bigfoot traveling in portals. Well, now it's on TV and everybody's talking about it. So now it's part of our lore or, you know, whatever you want to call this. I don't want to use the word information loosely because I don't know that a lot of this is information.
I think lore. I think it fits under that.
I think lore is the best way to say it because it certainly is information in there, but how much of it is truth, how much of it's embellished, it's really difficult to suss all that out.
Sorry, I'm looking up something. Continue. I'm just looking up something because I want to say something, but I want to make sure I'm fact checking myself.
So I appreciated in there where they tried to. It seemed like they tried to get expert opinion and weigh it, or at least discuss it against like all these eyewitness accounts, these plaster casts they had, drawings, things like that. And I liked the scene. I thought it was pretty funny and not at all staged, you guys, about how when Peter Graves was kind of like arguing with the expert who was saying, well, yeah, you've got all these anecdotal accounts, but that's not evidence. And Peter Graves is like getting frustrated. He's like, well, but how can you say with all these people seeing this stuff, how can you really say that there's not something going? And the guy's like, well, here's a skull. Bring me a skull and I'll believe yes. you, you know?
Yeah.
So it's funny, but the whole conversation is very much like, everything's kind of at arm's length here right now. And I'm sort of arguing with you, but I'm still Peter Graves, you know? Like,
well, it reminds me of when they actually showed the Patterson-Gimlin film. I think it was the first time it was played on a national stage, if I remember mm-hmm. correctly. But they have is he an anthropologist? I don't know
okay,
where he is.
There's the guy that Peter Graves is with, and then there's the guy that looks like Derek in like 10 years that is also being interviewed too. He's not getting it.
I don't get it.
Go ahead, fast forward to that point. He seriously, I'm like, oh my god, put a hat on that guy and it's Derek.
Which guy are you talking about?
Okay, during the interview with where they're talking about the Bigfoot film, it shows the one guy that's like with Peter Graves.
Oh,
then it
okay.
cuts to another guy that's like got bones or a plaster cast. And I'm like, oh my gosh, it looks like Derek Hayes in 10 years.
Oh, the guy in the flannel?
Yeah.
Are you saying I look like I'm from the 70s? So there's a guy in flannel. I don't know if I'm keeping this in or not. There's a guy in flannel that I wish I had his hairline. Let's just say that.
No, I'm figuring it grew back. It grows back over time. It comes back.
Anyhow, back to the relevant conversation at hand.
And what's relevant? I put a note. What was I talking about?
I forget what I was even talking about.
Patterson-Gimlin film.
Oh, Patterson-Gimlin. Yeah.
Patterson-Gimlin.
So I'll start over just in case none of that's salvageable. And they actually have a like a skeptic up there. I don't know if he's a bone doctor. I don't know what this guy's position was, and I'm scrubbing through, and it doesn't say.
Bone
doctors.
Got my PhD in bones.
But he's just like, oh, it's just a guy in a suit. Clearly a guy in a suit. You can see the bottom of his foot and all this stuff, and they have Grover Krantz coming
in. No, hold on a second.
And arguing with him.
The guy that has the bones behind him looks like you, not the guy in the flannel.
Well, that's Grover Krantz.
You look like Grover Krantz.
Okay.
And this is my last time on this show.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was Justin Zenger. Please applaud him off. So anyway, they did have Grover arguing with this. I don't know what this medical guy was. He's just in a lab coat, and they don't actually say who these people are. But he had a lot of points as to why the Patterson-Gimlin film was probably a hoax. And, of course, Grover was arguing with him, and they cut the scene back and forth.
So I got a question on that. Okay, with the three of us here, Patterson-Gimlin film, actual creature, hoax, what's all of our opinions on that? Can we unbox that in a quick way or no?
having done like little to no real research into it, though, I mean, the way I like to research crap, I think it's a dude in a suit.
All right.
I'd have to agree with that, I think. I don't want it to be, but it's just everything's just too shady about it.
On my end, I will point this out. And I'm not trying to cross-promote. This is just ironic timing. Astonishing Legends just did like a five-part series on it. Six. They're each an hour long, in-depth research of every single angle. I believe this was real before that. Listening to that kind of confirmed it for me. It's just one of those things. If the best Nessie photo is fake, there's a lot of other stuff that's the Gulf Breeze stuff for UFOs is more than likely fake. It's like, I just want something that's so good that I'm like, it has to be real. It has to be real on just please.
We have the Phoenix Lights. Those look pretty real to me.
That was just swamp gas.
The swamps of Arizona.
Yeah. The great Arizona swamps.
They got mosquitoes out there that'll carry you away.
But yeah, I mean, that's my thing is, but before they did all that analyzing on it and everything that they took 6 hours of their lives to do, or 6 hours of listening to do, I think it's real. I want it to be real because it's, like I said, this last thing that, like, I can kind of grab onto. And, I mean, there's not many people left that could have been involved in it. So, just, I mean, Gimlin, I think, is the only one still left.
Well, I think Bob Hieronymus is still alive. I'm not 100% sure on that, but
yeah, how
that's who a lot of
he?
People assume is inside the suit. And if you look at Bob, he looks just like Patty, in my opinion. But
big
he doesn't know how to get to
tits.
The film site, so I missed it. Whatever it was.
I said yes. He looks just like her. Big swinging ape tits.
Pendulous breast, Justin.
They made a big deal out of, like, well, this looks like it has breasts, but the forehead has a sagittarial crest or whatever it was, which is male. They really focused on that thing's boobs, is what I'm trying to say.
Don't we all watch this?
Hey, what was the deal with the horse at the beginning of that clip, too?
Wait.
Like, it was a horse, like, whinnying, but, like, going crazy. Like, oh, 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 like, as they were, like, shaky cam until it got on the Patterson-Gimlin Bigfoot.
Well, what
okay,
you saw
so,
was... Go ahead.
So you're talking
was
about where they're in the woods, and it's showing it? The
I'm
guy
talking
with...
about... It's part of the Patterson-Gimlin film,
yeah,
at least in
there's
this.
Like, there's hours of them out in the woods, like, before this. There was 80-some feet of film before that of them just filming themselves out in the woods, like, getting B-roll and stuff.
Yeah, they were out shooting a documentary about Bigfoot when they found Bigfoot.
Yeah.
So was there actually a horse whinnying on their... footage, or did they just have footage, or what?
It's a silent film, so I'm sure the horse would have been throwing a fit because it did rear up, and you can see it in the video that it does, or the film that it does. But that was all added afterward because it was
okay.
It was a 16mm silent film, I believe.
Now, the other thing that kind of lends credence to this is the fact they have that this particular part of the film where they have the Bigfoot in it is near the end of the film. Why would you put it at the end of the film if you're going to fake it? Like, why wouldn't you have it at the beginning? Or, you know, because that would have been done in one perfect take, because then you would have had to record all this other stuff to lead up to the faking of the film. But
well,
I'm not trying to argue for or against it. I just wanted to point that out. That was a very interesting thing that I never knew, that it was near the end of the film roll. So
maybe they didn't have any film left.
Well, my thought was more that, you know, they were planning on using this footage in a documentary, but it turned out so good that they're like, yeah, forget the documentary. Let's just sell this clip. And so that's basically why they stopped when they did. Mm. But none of them really made any money off of it. A third party made most of the money.
Yeah.
So
yeah, like made all the money.
They didn't do a very good job of it, but who knows? I wasn't
That's
there.
The Patterson-Gimlin film, anyway.
Yes.
In a buttery, crunchy nutshell, or whatever you say. So, yeah, I guess this was a film that's near and dear to my heart, at least. Like I said, I grew up watching this constantly, and I was huge into cryptids and stuff around this time. It's about the same time I had my sighting, actually, that kind of got me into all this. So
I was going to make a joke about
was
that.
Was right.
I was going to be like, did the giant alien black cat that you saw show you the film? Was he like, hey, kid, here's a film, watch it, and then ran off?
You want to see something spooky? And he opens his trench coat and it's just filled with film reels? Yeah, that's exactly what happened.
Here, take this one.
So were you scared at all as a kid watching this?
I wasn't watching it, but I'll tell you, I grew up in the woods in the middle of nowhere. So we would watch this on a borrowed VCR we had, and... as soon as I went outside, that's when I was afraid. because I would think back to this and like, oh, it's all real. And those places didn't look that unsimilar to where, you know, I live. There's a pond and there's a tree. Like, I'm 8, 9 years old, so it looks the same. Excuse me. So, yeah, it frightened me a little bit to be outside afterward, but watching it, I was just fascinated. Like, I just couldn't believe that any of these things could be out here, let alone one of them.
Yeah, for the most part, it didn't seem too freaky as a film, but they did play up some of the dramatizations. Boy, that was a redundant sentence. The one sequence where the girl was on the couch and the thing like busts the window, was that the Falk monster? Were they talking about that?
I don't know. I think the Falk monster busted through a bathroom window. A guy was sitting on the crapper, I think is what happened.
Wait, are you saying that they were not accurate with this reenactment? That's impossible. They were so accurate up to this point.
I'm trying to pin down which reenactment. there's a girl sitting on a couch watching TV, and then there's like this horrible shadow of a Bigfoot that like passes by the window. That's obviously shot from the inside, not the outside, right? Because it keeps going even when the wall stops the window. Anyway, and then all of a sudden it like busts the window and tries to grab for her, and she jumps up and screams for the guy in the house, and he like grabs a shotgun and like tries to shove her out of the way, and she doesn't move, and then it's like this suspenseful thing where he's like edging towards the door, and he opens it up, and there's the Bigfoot standing there, and it's like, you know,
got any sugar?
And I just wonder like how freaky that was for some people who were watching it, kids maybe, you know.
Well, does anybody get the like Texas Chainsaw Massacre vibe from this film at all? It's that grainy film footage, kind of in that music a little bit. I just kind of get that same. I just watched that clip as I was talking, and you're right, the shadow goes on the wall.
Some dude just passed in front of a lamp.
And she's
the shadow's coming
now
from inside the house.
I'm telling you what, guys, you have to watch this film. It's 86 minutes. You'll learn some stuff. If
it's on YouTube,
it's on YouTube. It's free. It's on Amazon Prime. It's everywhere. It's free.
Oh,
just
shoot.
Go check it out. And I love it. Still, even I had a great time watching. I watched it 3 times this week, actually, just in preparation. I'd have it on in the background while I was doing whatever else I was doing. It's I don't know. It's my generation's Cabbage Patch movie, I guess. I don't know what it is. There he is. He's in the window. They open the door, and it's a freeze frame on the Bigfoot's face, and it's actually a decent makeup job. And he just has
There's a confused look on his face. Costumes and stuff.
Better than the previous film we talked about.
Hands down. Going back, my favorite reenactment, and one that sticks with me to this day, and certainly did when I was a kid, was the babysitter. She was standing alongside a dark road waiting for her dad to come pick her up.
Right?
And like
such a 70s thing to do.
This was me growing up, not babysitting, but getting picked up on a dark road somewhere. I mean, that was my whole childhood. It was just getting picked up on a dark road somewhere. But so they pick up this woman, and they're, you know, they said she was a senior in high school, so they got picked up by her father, so they're talking about homework or something. All of a sudden, a Bigfoot jumps out in front of their car, and she screams. But this thing was only 50, 60 feet down the road from essentially where she was picked up from. And when I was a kid, I couldn't stop thinking about that. I'm like, well, what's 50 feet down the road from me right now? Like that thing that stuck in my head, and watching it now, like, it's corny now, but I still remember, you know, how I felt when I watched the clip initially when I was younger.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I just rewatched the scene with the Bigfoot in the window. The door has little panes where you can look outside.
Yeah. Why'd you have to open it?
Why'd you have to open it?
But to be fair, it looks like he scared the crap out of the Bigfoot.
Yeah.
The Bigfoot kind of makes a move like, should I run? What am I? Oh, he just freezes.
What am I doing here?
It looked like it just had Botox. Its face did not move one bit.
Oh, boy.
So there is something that really grabbed me, and I do want to talk about this because this like bothered me for a little bit. So I finally looked it up. Does the name of that psychic ring a bell with either of you, Peter Herkos?
It sounds vaguely familiar to me, and I wondered if it was the same guy from Sightings, but then I saw him, because the white-haired guy from the white-haired psychic basically looked like Albert Einstein. And he was on Sightings, and his name was Peter, so I thought it was him, but sorry. Continue.
What about you, Laura?
Me? Yeah. Peter Herkos?
Yeah.
Not really.
It rang a bell with me, because I remember hearing his name involved with the Boston Strangler.
Oh, yeah, I don't get into that crap. So
he was one of those with that. He also said that Adolf Hitler was alive in Argentina and was later in prison for impersonating a federal agent. Just the kind of a weird thing.
So let's explain who we're talking about from the film.
Yeah, sorry. I keep doing that. So in the film, they take Peter Graves and his hair. Take a plaster cast of a Bigfoot footprint.
You should use air quotes.
Sorry, there's just air quotes flying left and right here.
This thing does not look like a Bigfoot footprint in any way.
In a briefcase,
but they set this up before that as saying, you know, police agencies have used some strange stuff to solve cases sometimes, including psychics. And then it cuts to him doing all this, goes to this guy's house. That's when he gets out of the sports car randomly, goes into this guy's house. Once again, has something to where it zoomed in on his face, then zooms out to show the other guy sitting there. And he has him, like, examine the briefcase. And the guy,
the other guy's the psychic that
can
apparently remote view things or
Peter,
know
the
things.
Is Herkos. And he, like, holds it, like, goes over it, like, the briefcase, and then says, like, oh, it's something hairy. I have it right here. Yeah, half man. And then after he, like, they open it, and he's like, oh, it's Bigfoot thing. He's like, do you want me to draw what I saw? And he draws, like, this looks like Toby after not shaving for a year. Looking guy. So, I mean, is that accurate? Is that psychic? I don't know.
Well, I mean, he nailed it on the head. If somebody did that in front of me and I knew for sure they couldn't get that information, I'd be thoroughly impressed. I can play it. I have it right here. This is what he said about what's in the box. Now, keep in mind, it's a Bigfoot cast.
He takes a moment to think about it, and then he's like, I'll try.
He jostles it around a bit.
It's in a half man, half animal. Weighs about... I would say about 500 pounds, about between 8 and 9 feet, lives in cave.
So he lives in cave.
Bong and a blitch.
This guy looks exactly like Harvey Keitel, by the way. I don't know if you guys picked up on that, but he looks exactly like him.
He's saying lives in cave. I didn't catch that. I thought he was like just saying, I just thought he was saying like some weird like, Dutch term or something.
Lipchen cave.
It's a kind of cheese over there, I think.
Yeah. Or maybe that's their term for Bigfoot. Oh, it's a Lipchen cave.
The way, I'm trying to figure out exactly what I think is going on in this scene. If they, like...
Bullshit.
Set it up and it's scripted. If they told him, like... Here's what's in this case. You act like you just figured this out and then just go run with it and improvise. Or, like, what... I refuse to believe that this guy took a sight unseen briefcase and then started talking about, like, describing a Bigfoot from it. Either he had some prior knowledge of it, or he knew what was going on getting into this interview with Peter Graves and his hair.
Okay, can I take this first, Derek, real quick?
Sure.
All right, not trying to poke a hole in your theory here, David, but so you're telling me that some intern called this guy and was like, hey, we're doing a Bigfoot documentary. Is there any way you could be involved by, like, looking at a Bigfoot footprint and telling us what their creature is? And then Peter Herkos is like, oh, of course I will. And they're like, okay, cool. Then they show up and they're like, hey, we're not going to tell them that there's a Bigfoot footprint cast in here, right? And they look at the intern and he's like, yeah, definitely. Definitely didn't tell him that.
That's probably exactly how it went down.
I'm cool with that.
Well, I mean, what he's doing is essentially
anything about the footprint, right?
Well, yeah, he didn't really say that it's a footprint. He just said what's associated with the footprint. In a way, I guess he's doing remote viewing, essentially.
He thought there was an actual Bigfoot in the case, I guess.
Like full a little size. Miniature, a little tiny Bigfoot. Would it be
How
a little
How many times in this picture did they say that the thing was about 500 pounds, 8 or 9 feet tall? Like, every witness basically said this exact description, right?
Yeah, yeah. It was almost like it was spoon-fed to them right before the camera rolled.
Well, it was like 8.5 feet tall, 600 pounds. No. It was 9 feet tall, 500 pounds. No, it was 9 feet tall. Okay, fine.
One of my favorite parts. So they did this the dramatic reenactment of this like Eagle Scout, right, who went up with a troop and camped out. And it was him older telling about this sighting he had, and then they did a dramatic reenactment of the kids. But my favorite part about it was this guy. They were showing him. He's standing up in the woods, kind of, you know, got his leg cocked up there, and he's talking about this. And then, like, at one point, he's got this huge sketch pad. And he's, like, telling the story as he's, like, drawing on the sketch pad. And you don't see it. But he's, like, you know, he's good at telling the story. And he's, like, really drawing this thing. And I'm like, wow, is he going to – what's on the sketch pad? Are we going to see what he saw? And then he ends his story. And he's, like, and this is what I saw. And it's this dipshitty footprint. Like, it looks like
– something you find on a refrigerator. Essentially is what it was.
Yeah, like, it looks like this 3-year-old drawing of a footprint. Like, it looked like he was drawing something so, like, detailed.
It really does.
Except just being like a circle with some humps at the top.
And the music was so dramatic when they revealed the image as well. It's the it's around the 33-minute mark if anybody wants to go check that out.
37 in the video
he
I'm
looks
watching.
So
I got
Oh, I guess it's probably different in every video.
No.
Ignore my
I
numbers.
Think this is where he's showing. Yeah, he shows it. Oh. And man, that guy's got some sideburns.
Everybody
oh, yeah.
has some sideburns
one of,
in this
one
film.
Of the dudes, one of the dudes, I'm more convinced that one of these dudes, the one that was standing there holding his kid talking about it.
Yes.
I'm more convinced that dude is Elvis. Than I am that these Bigfoot encounters
What was
are real.
The deal with that? Like, it's just, I'm like, oh, the kid's going to say something about this. Nope, the kid's just there.
Kids.
They're
there.
Interviewing this guy on his fence, and his kid's just hanging out at his feet, just kind of chilling. The guy looks like Woody from Toy Story and Woodrow Wilson had a baby. essentially what this guy looks like.
I don't even
like.
Know
he's
what that
really,
means, but you're right.
He's a really tall, skinny guy with these weird glasses on. I don't know. But yeah, like the interviews were like so candid, I guess. To me, that lent a lot of credibility to it. You know, I was watching these as a kid, I'm thinking these are just normal people. And now I'm looking, I'm like, if these were normal people in the 70s, I'm glad I missed most of it.
I liked the interviews with the normal people. The reenactments were just, oh my gosh, what a treat to watch. Because you know this was just... a bunch of actors, and they're like, okay, guys, you're just a bunch of dudes hanging out at a campfire. Oh. I just want you to, like, make each other laugh. Just go for it. Just hang out, have a good time. Then all of a sudden, you're going to hear something, you know? Like,
yeah. It's exactly what happened. And at a certain point, they're like, oh, you're cooking dinner next time. No, you're cooking dinner.
Yeah, guys, yeah, don't razz me.
What was that sound? And then they all get up, and it, I don't know. It's part of the gold for me is
yeah.
these terrible... goofy reenactments.
So there's enough random interviews in this movie that I got confused on which one that we were talking about. So the one on the fence is the guy in the red
mm-hmm.
who's smoking, by the way. I didn't notice that with his kid there. There's another, not, I mean, just smoking in general with the whole fact that, you know, it's the
70s.
He was
also good looking, but, you know, moving on.
But then there's the other guy that's sitting on the tree stump with his kid.
That's what I'm talking. That's who
yeah,
I was talking about. He looks
oh,
like
that's
Elvis.
The one I was talking about too. Because
okay.
I'm like, there
there's
wasn't a
so
fence.
Many people with kids in this movie. I got them confused.
But yes, that guy does look like Elvis.
He looks like Elvis has hung it up and retired.
Wait, is this Elvis? Because
I'm telling you, man. More evidence of that than there is of Nessie.
I can see him being like that. This was the last actual footage of Elvis. Just shows his kid randomly.
What do you think, Derek?
I just found them. I remember this. I can picture every one of these frames. I've seen them so many times. Yeah, it's definitely Elvis. But weird story. When I was 10 years old, around the same time that I was watching this, weirdly enough, if you're really good in school, you get to go to McDonald's at the end of the semester. Oh, man, was I pumped. So I got to go to McDonald's, and I had my $5. I was going to buy everything I could buy for $5. And Elvis was in the McDonald's. He had the jumpsuit on. He had the hair. He said, thank you very much. He did everything. And I was 10, and I'd seen the tabloids. That's all that was in the tabloids. Elvis is still alive. And he wasn't. This was just some random janitor or something that was in McDonald's. But I was certain that I saw Elvis. This was 100% Elvis. And it probably took until I was 25 before I came to grips with reality that probably wasn't Elvis. It was a tragic day.
The day the music died, literally.
Oh, man. Also, I just got to point out this guy, the guy in the white shirt that has, like, the obvious, like, he has that black hair just right in the middle there, and then white, just that, like, skunk patch or whatever. I don't know. Like, that's 70s through and through right there.
You're
going
to have
guy.
To be more specific than the guy with the white shirt and the weird hair.
30 minutes in. About 30 minutes in, he's leaning against his car. It slowly zooms in on him. His pants are, like, up around his, like, stomach.
Nipples. Yep.
Yes.
That's him.
Like, just so 70s.
I enjoyed it, though. It kept my attention throughout, you know. I do like, they did also interview a dude that was a hoaxer. He straight up was like, I'm doing this to mess with people because they called us hicks.
Yeah, that's exactly what he says. And you know what's weird about that is I was in the kitchen cooking or something the other day, and that part came on, and he said Ray, and I hit a pan or something. I didn't hear the last name. And I thought he said Ray Wallace, which I don't know if you guys are familiar, but Ray Wallace, his kids came out, I want to say 10 years ago or so, and claimed that he was the creator of Bigfoot. Essentially, in the 50s, he created these feet and ran around. So this guy in this documentary's name was Ray as well, but it turned out to be some other Ray guy, and it didn't even say where he lived. But at first, I thought maybe it was they broke the Ray Wallace thing early on, and we just didn't pick up on it. But no such luck. Bigfoot nerd stuff.
Yeah, but it shows him putting on boots, these big boots that have like gigantic footprints on the bottom. I don't know, you know, somehow he's attached them and everything, and then he puts them on, gets up and runs off.
They're flat as a board too. I don't know who's gonna fall for that, but people in the 70s, this production
not
company.
Dead Elvis, that's who.
Peter Graves. Yeah, I mean,
a
there's
lot
something
of footprints, though, right?
Yeah. They talk about footprints. They talk about scat a lot. They talk about they have some vocalizations. I know we mentioned that, and they even show a few pictures. Although I didn't really see, they're blob squatch pictures, essentially. But you know, the nostalgic factor for this is pretty high with me. You guys probably didn't watch this growing up, I assume.
No.
So it probably doesn't have that same effect. People that watch, like, Creature of Black Lake, or there's another Sasquatch documentary just called Sasquatch, or obviously Legend of Boggy Creek, you know, a lot of people that watch these early on, it sticks with them. So, you know, at 40, I could sit here and watch this and just be as entertained as the day I watched it, I know, in the early or mid-80s. So
I wish I could remember some of the, like, stuff I watched when I was younger on, like, Nessie and dinosaurs and stuff like that. Because there was a dinosaur thing I used to watch that's like what got me into cryptids, because they talked about there could be living dinosaurs even today, such as the Loch Ness Monster.
And I know what you're talking about.
Was it the cartoon Dino Riders?
Yes, it was. Yes, it was.
The cartoon documentary.
the cartoon documentary of Dino Riders. And I was sitting there with my Dino Rider toys going, oh, they're real. Mm-hmm. Yes. Nailed it on the head, sir.
I don't know what dino riders are.
Oh, man. People who do are sitting there right now clapping.
Are they like Thundercats? Because I know what Thundercats are.
Okay, you know how in... Oh, wait, I'm thinking of He-Man. Basically,
I know what He-Man is.
You know how, like, dinosaurs are cool, and you're like, hey, let's mount, like, a laser gun to that dinosaur. Did you ever think that as a kid?
Like sharks with giant lasers on their freaking heads?
Yeah, basically. But it's dinosaurs with giant freaking lasers all over their body. It was a toy series and a TV series.
Oh, the 80s were a weird time.
They were. They were very weird. Everything transformed.
All those psychedelics from the 70s became coke in the 80s, and sky was the
all
limit.
Downhill. All downhill from there. No, I mean, like I said, this is really cool, and I mean, I hope we're going to do another one of these, because I've got a modern one of these that I want to do, so just throwing that out there.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I think it's one of the... probably the best one that we've covered since we've been starting these roundtables.
Yes, all just, three of them.
That's saying a
it's
lot.
Top
right
of the
there.
Heap. But you know, it had even for a 45-year-old film, had great presentation. It had information, you know, quote unquote. It had a little bit of everything, and it had enough variety to kind of keep you going and asked some questions, and you know. Mostly kind of erred on the side of believing all this stuff as opposed to being too skeptical about it. But, yeah, still a fun ride.
I got nothing. I mean, the only note I had was the, Roosevelt account. I mean, the Teddy Roosevelt thing, but they didn't really go into that more. I just wrote it down when they mentioned it, and it's like, that's all they did was mention it. So I was like, oh, poo. I also had a joke here about the woman who was having trouble with the fishing reel. I'm like, Hop must have been using a bait caster. But I'm like, no, that is way too niche audience of a joke that no one's going to get but people who fish.
There's like three fishermen and like Bill Dance.
Oh, yes, that's...
Laughing.
No, you... Thank you. Yes, there is tons of people who apparently go fishing and you will see a Bigfoot.
That's fair.
And most of these accounts, they... They all talk about not only was it 8 or 9 feet tall, 500 pounds, but it stank. That was another big thing that everybody kept saying.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, they even the woman that was under hypnosis, I think, she's like, oh, it smells so bad or something like that.
Yeah. Oh, my God, it just
stinks.
That
was so awkward, that hypnosis thing. That was... The polygraph was awkward enough, but, like... But I appreciate the... I appreciate what they're showing. It was different than all the other stuff. So,
well, I think it's interesting to see what they thought was science, I guess, at the time, or what the, you know, or how technology has advanced since then. There's a certain point where they're plotting points of audio, I guess. I'm not even 100% sure how this works, but they actually manually have to type in numbers to plot this audio, and it's like a 3-second clip or something, and it took them a day to put the numbers in. Here we recorded an hour-long podcast in an hour, and there's three of us from all over the country. So it's just amazing to see how far the technology's gone, yet we haven't found anything. So maybe it should raise a few questions.
Well, I do like how a lot of the questions raised in this are still valid questions that are being asked today, too. Why don't we ever find a body? Why isn't one of these, you know, captured better on this? Like... It's stuff that you hear today still, and of course, I mean, do I believe in Bigfoot? Yes. These are questions that people ask
Nobody
me. I'm like, I don't know. I was asking
it's not
myself
that kind of show.
Before
it's...
you guys could. I was cutting you guys off before
Is
you
Is there
went...
anything else you'd like to ask yourself before we move on?
Should I have watched this movie? No, I mean... It's one of those things to where it's like, oh, yeah, I've been in the woods a ton. I haven't seen a dead body of an animal. Had to do that
pause
there.
That's true. It's a good point.
But people do find them.
I've seen bones, like a deer skull and stuff every now and then. Or like, oh, that looks like a thigh bone to a deer. Walking on this trail, it's just not something you really are like. Are you out in the woods, like, look? looking for, like, where's a body? Because you'll probably, if it is a more recently dead carcass, you'll probably smell something and be like, oh, I'm not going that way.
Well, you know, now that you bring that up, the woods is alive with insects and all these creatures that basically come out at night and dispose of this body, and they can do a deer in a day, you know, if the conditions are right. So you're left with a pile of bones, essentially. So let's say the random guy, let's say, Justin, you're out in the woods somewhere in Pacific Northwest, and you find a pile of bones, no skull, because some animals hauled off with the skull, or it got buried, or knocked down the hill, or fell off, or who knows what happened to it.
Or was decapitated.
Or decapitated by another Bigfoot. So this could be a pile of Bigfoot bones, and to you it's like, oh, a dead moose or dead deer or something, because you don't know what you're looking at. Without the skull, it's just a pile of bones. And it's not going to be all laid out and like in a perfect shape. It's going to be literally scattered pile of bones with hair and blood and guts all stained in the ground. It's going to be a disgusting scene.
Wait a second. So you're telling me that bones aren't just laid out perfectly when they're buried? Just like dinosaur bones, and they're not numbered on where they go on the thing, too?
Well,
how do scientists put these things together?
Actually, they are sometimes. I was just watching something on the marsupial lion in Australia, and they found one of its skeletons just laying on the floor in this cave. It just looked like if it was a skeleton, it just laid down. It was the weirdest thing. So, yes, the answer is yes to that, too.
That is strange, but... No,
they
mean...
They also did a really... They went on a lot about when people found hair samples. They'd be like, and tests have been done, and it corresponds to no living creature known to man. And it's like, does it? Really? Is it?
Yeah, they didn't have DNA testing then, so what were they doing? Just going by looks, essentially, right?
Taste. This doesn't...
Taste.
That's how they discovered sucralose, right?
that's how they found the coelacanth. So.
That's how they found the coelacanth.
I don't know. This fish might be different. Get a scale off it. Have our guy lick it.
Yeah. Guy comes in with the insured tongue.
Trent the fish licker.
Hi, I'm Trent Fishlicker.
So last time I pissed off people from Kentucky. Sorry, I walked all over your joke. Last show I pissed off people in Kentucky. This time it's Trent. So if your name is Trent,
this time,
come
it's
and get
all
it,
the
buddy.
Fish lickers.
Take that.
You know who you are. New England fish lickers.
But no, I mean, it's like the hair samples. I feel like is hair. I mean, I'm not a hair expert. I don't go around licking hair to see cat hair.
Not what
dog
I
hair.
Heard.
Unknown hair.
Well, they can look at it in a microscope. Each hair, each species has a different type of hair. Some of them are hollow. Some of them are have scales going certain ways. Like they can, for the most part, identify what it is. So if it doesn't show up in their catalog of known hair samples, then it's unidentified. Yeah. But that doesn't mean that it's Bigfoot. It could be an exotic dog that somebody brought from China, or an anteater that got loose, or who knows what it could be. But it doesn't necessarily mean it's Bigfoot.
This is just a porcupine spike.
They had the excuse of that the science hadn't quite progressed to the level that, of what they were trying to accomplish with it. I would say, I mean, they had plenty of good science then, but if we compare it to, like, what we have today, they couldn't get away with what they were saying then unless they were just, you know, unless they're just trying to rile people up and sell something today. You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Yeah,
We've got better techniques and testing and stuff. So if this documentary were made again today, which there's documentaries coming out, like, you know, hot pies at a friggin' Nickelback concert. That happens, doesn't it?
Yes.
pie
tins everywhere. And if you take them to the recycle, you get a nickel back.
So maybe, you know, today people are still trying to say, well, these hair samples are from unknown creatures or whatever. But then you also get the conflicting reports of, like, well, actually, no, this came back, you know, this other lab tested it or something and came back as wolf hair or bear hair or, you know, something else.
Mm-hmm. Five episodes of Monster Quest that involved that exact premise.
I was thinking of the Snow Grove Lake episode.
Yeah, I was about to say, and it's always something that's introduced in Act 1, and then 5 minutes before the show ends, they finally get back to what it is. Remember that hair we found earlier in the show? Yeah. Well, the tests have come back, and it's cat hair.
Yeah, that's what we call in the business Chekhov's scat.
Yeah.
You know.
Also,
you show the scat in Act 1, it's going to come back in Act 3.
Also, I did have something for way earlier when you were talking about, like, they got to pitch new stuff because everything's been done, Derek. I think that pitch also was how we got Killing Bigfoot.
Yeah. I mean, that's how you're going to end up with all kinds of fringe topics and see what sticks kind of situation. But, for every Killing Bigfoot you have, you know, Seth Breedlove's documentaries are a little bit different. I mean, there's a different spin on all those. So, you know, you have your positives and your negatives. Although I've never seen Killing Bigfoot, so I shouldn't say it's negative. I've never seen it.
I haven't. I think I've seen, like, part of an episode. I just knew that when you said that way earlier in the episode, I was like, I need to look up something that's ridiculous because that is probably how they pitched it. It's like, you know, people have tried to get, you know. Now I'm just going to offend everybody with a vaguely southern accent.
With your Matthew McConaughey?
Yes. You know, all right. Everyone's tried to kill Bigfoot. Everyone's tried to find Bigfoot, but has anyone tried to kill Bigfoot? That's what we're going to do. All right.
Did they kill him?
In a totally different direction, by the way.
It was spot on, by the way.
Thank you. It was not.
I was being kind.
Thank you. I have no clue. I just know that, like, when you made that comment of, oh, it's all been done, so I have to put a new twist on it, I'm like, oh, yeah, that's right. There's this thing where they're trying to kill Bigfoot now. Because it's like, that will prove it's real. You guys killed the last one. Well, it was real. So,
sorry, I mean, Sam Elliott beat you.
Exactly. We are learning so much through this series of things we do with these movies and documentaries. I just wanted to do a quick kind of, I guess, speed round or bang bang round.
Ayo.
Roll credits.
Yes, thank you. So, Bigfoot, yay or nay? Real, fake, you guys.
I'm like the dude with the skull on the desk with Peter Graves trying to argue about anecdotes. I'm like, you got to bring me something hard, some hard evidence before I believe it. So for me right now, nay.
Derek?
I won't say definitively one way or the other, but I would say it's maybe got like a 10 to 15, 20% chance of being real. There's too many factors for me that there's other things out there I think more realistic. Let's put it that way.
Loch Ness Monster, since that was brought up in this.
No.
No.
Never was and never will be.
I also like how at one point in there, somebody, they threw out that somebody said there could be 30 to 40 Nessies living in Loch Ness. And I'm like, what? Like, one giant, and they even say, like, these giant monsters living in Loch Ness. And I'm like, do you hear what you're saying? I get the things, like, miles long and stuff, but 30 to 40? What are they eating? Each other?
Yeah, it's just tourist. Violent.
Tourist?
That's why there's no more pictures. They've learned to detect cameras.
Well, toward the end of the film, they actually did the same thing with Bigfoot. They're like, oh, you know, this creature lives out here. They were definite about that. It lives out here. It eats this. It sleeps here. It's the children live have a long childhood. Somehow they know that.
Yeah.
They made a point to tell us that the childhood of a Bigfoot is longer than that of any other animal in the animal kingdom. So they took a lot of liberties with the truth. Let's put it that way.
Peter Graves just knew. He knew.
A bunch of, like, kids in these gorilla or ape costumes rolling around and wrestling in the background as he's talking.
Yeah.
And also, like, they're not smart. They barely use sticks and stones for tools. But then, like, at another part, they're like, these creatures rolled boulders over onto somebody's station wagon or something and, like, when I looked at them, I saw intelligence in the eyes. I'm like, make up your mind. Are they dumb ape creatures?
Not that much intelligence, just enough to keep them from getting shot.
I guess. Just,
they know how to avoid bullets and take revenge. That's basically it.
That's not what Sam Elliott said.
yeah. You better hope David Flora doesn't catch you out on a back road with a gun, because I'm going to need to see a high school diploma at least.
Justin's in the background. Shoot it! Shoot it!
Shoot her!
So hot! I'm hungry! Shoot it!
But it looks so human. Shoot it!
Shoot it twice!
Make sure it's dead!
I think we've talked longer than the actual film played for, so we've pretty much covered just about all of it. Obviously, I liked it. You guys seem to be, for the most part, a fan of it, so... I consider this a success. This is much better than last time.
Take that, Flora.
That's right.
Yeah, put that in your pipe and smoke it.
That shows you to pick a movie.
Yeah. Take that dose of LSD and take a friggin' polygraph test. That was the saying in the 70s, anyway.
Oh, man. So, yeah. I'm good. You guys?
Yep. Thanks for listening. Yeah.
It was a good one.
You guys, I'm assuming people listening know where to find all of us by this point.
If you don't, Google it.
Yep.
We'll make you earn this one.
You got to work for it. Also, if you have any negative comments, please post them to Blurry Photos.
No, send them to Secret Transmission.
Yes, send them to Toby.
We don't have Toby today, so if you have any complaints about this episode, send them to Secret Transmission.
All of it was his fault.
100%.
Oh, man. All right.
Well, thanks, guys, for letting me share a little bit of my childhood with you guys. Next time we're doing Baby, the Brontosaurus movie. So
that I
gear
do
up
watch.
For that.
Yeah. I've never seen it, ironically, somehow.
Well, I've seen
it. Why is that ironic?
35 years.
Because I love dinosaurs. I love cryptids. And it's,
and babies. That's,
yeah, both. Just like I've never seen E.T. all the way through because that terrified me as a kid. Mm-hmm. I'm scared of aliens because I saw Close Encounters from the Third Kind way too soon.
Try watching Fire in the Sky at about 11.
Oh yeah, good
maybe
grief.
It was that. I don't know. One of
try
those.
Try watching it at 30.
Just try watching it.
Man, I'd be hiding under a table too.
Yeah. All right, so, guys. Well, thanks you guys, Derek. for doing all this, and we'll catch you on the next round table.
Yes.
Bye.
Actually, we should call it the square table.
It all starts with an invitation to experience Lexus. To connect with us. To see that no detail is too small. To be our special guest. It starts as an invitation to drive a Lexus vehicle, but it becomes an exceptional experience. The Invitation to Lexus sales event. Your invitation is always open, but the offers only last through March 31st. Experience amazing at your Lexus dealer. Click the banner to discover more.
On a summer night, Douglas Wagg Jr. lay motionless across a strip of railroad tracks before being struck by an oncoming train. I'm investigative journalist Delia D'Ambra, and my investigation into exactly how Doug died took me into the depths of a bizarre mystery.
It was really hard to understand what was fact and what wasn't.
A mystery that has led me from one suspicious death to another. Listen to Counterclock now, wherever you listen to podcasts.